This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you. In your town, your suburb.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
Are Gen Z smoking? Not vaping, but smoking cigarettes. There is growing concern that pop culture is making smoking cool again for this demographic, for people in their mid to late 20s, that smoking is experiencing somewhat of a pop culture revival. There are Sigfluencers. Yeah, you heard it right. Sigfluencers on Insta. So pages and images of celebrities smoking, people like Sabrina Carpenter and Jeremy Allen White. And this is a generation that we're talking about who pretty much missed out on the intense and hardcore anti-smoking campaigns that we all remember. They were decades ago. But now, thanks to illegal cigarettes, smoking is cheap. It's as cheap as it was decades ago. We're talking around $15 a pack. So have you noticed a resurgence in cigarettes, and in particular in those that are in their 20s? 1-300-222-774. And also coming up in this first half hour, what if farmers markets were in the city all the time? And what if farmers markets were a real alternative to supermarkets, not just there occasionally on the weekends and every third Saturday of the month, but they were in the city all the time and they were a fair income alternative to supermarkets? Is that a good idea?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Gen Z, so those in their 20s, kind of mid to late 20s, are smoking. Not vaping, but smoking cigarettes. So for this demographic, vaping is actually seen as a little bit cringe. They might have started out as vapers, but now they've moved to cigarettes and to illegal cigarettes, which are cheap. And as a result, there is a growing concern that this generation is not only taking it up, but is passing it down to the next generation as well. So what role has popular culture got to play in this, given that we have things like Sigfluencers on Instagram? Becky Freeman is a professor of public health at the University of Sydney. Becky, I learnt the term Sigfluencer today. I knew that there were lots of images of really hip, fashionable people smoking, album covers with smoking, films with smoking. But the fact that there's dedicated sites to just cool people smoking, gosh, it's really taking it to the next level.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you say it like that, it is a pretty depressing, actually. But I will say that in some ways, this isn't really a new phenomenon. It's just that it's happening on new forms of media. If you go back to, you know, the sort of the golden age of Hollywood with those black and white films and the cigarette filter, I mean, those images were really compelling, too. And I've seen collections of, you know, images from the 70s, 80s and 90s that really emphasize the glamour of smoking. This is the latest iteration.
But we did a lot to deglamorize it. Decades of work, we saw them start to be removed from films. We saw them definitely be removed from advertising, sponsorship, all that kind of stuff. We saw really horrific images be put onto cigarette packs. All of that has fallen away now, not just because of the illegal tobacco trade, but with the rise of just famous cool people smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree that we do not have the same hard-hitting campaigns, you know, that every cigarette is doing you damage and the lung that you would squeeze and the black tar would come out. I mean, everybody who grew up in Australia remembers those ads. And we just don't have the same kind of focus anymore. We need to bring those ads back, essentially. But I would also say it's interesting to me, this idea that, you know, young pop culture figures are using cigarettes to help sort of present a certain image, that cigarettes are such an easy shorthand for us. They signify so many things, that you're either a rebel or you're counterculture or that you're different from the mainstream.
This text says these cigarette smokers are people who are addicted to vaping and they can't get them legally anymore. Don't fool yourself. Is that the case? Just anecdotally, speaking to younger people around the office who have a high percentage of their mates who smoke, say, no, they might have started vaping, but then it started to look a bit cringy and that cigarettes look cooler.
I actually lead a study called Generation Vape, where we survey young people all across Australia every 6 months, and we also do interviews with them. And absolutely, young people started vaping quite young, in their teens. And we know that young people who vape are 5 times more likely to go on to smoke. And I got the exact same thing in my research, hearing from people in their, particularly in their 20s, saying, oh, vaping, it's cringe. They use that word cringe all the time. It's something young people do. I wanted to quit. I tried smoking and realized smoking was even, you know, more satisfying to me than vaping. It had these sort of more grown-up connotations. It's a real concern. But I will say, if we look at Australia's data, so research showing the prevalence of smoking amongst young people, thankfully, we are not yet seeing that increase, but I am very concerned that we soon will, especially with the proliferation of illicit tobacco.
If we look back generations ago, and if I look back to, say, the 90s, when I know a lot of my colleagues or friends smoked, we saw the decline through the advertising campaign, through the marketing that you've been talking about. However, it was very easy to do, right? It was quite streamlined. We didn't have the sort of, you know, we've got media being thrown at us in all aspects of our lives now. I can't even imagine how you could run an anti-smoking campaign, given how algorithms work, given how we consume media now. It's not as simple as an advert here, a billboard there, a TV commercial here.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to be just as sophisticated as the bodies that promote these products, as the vape companies, as the tobacco companies, in targeting our public health messages. Because you're right, the whole family doesn't gather around free-to-air television anymore and watch the same thing and get exposed to these ads. But there absolutely are ways to ensure that these ads reach users. And it was interesting hearing you mention, you know, the 90s. And I was a teenager in the 90s myself, and I remember the images of Kate Moss, the model, and all those black and white ads smoking. She's doing the same thing now. Again, it's like this retro ad for a luxury fashion brand, and she's smoking in all their promotions.
Really?
And I just wonder, if these sort of like feelings of nostalgia and retro fashion is also yet another theme that's linked to this promotion of smoking imagery.
The 90s is back, and cigarettes along with it. Becky Freeman is with you, Professor of Public Health at the University of Sydney. We're just talking about the rise of Gen Z in particular, smoking cigarettes again, not vaping, but smoking cigarettes. They're cheap, and there are cigfluencers and popular culture and this rise of people smoking, not just in social media feeds, but also in films as well, I've noticed it, Becky. That sort of fell away for a while, but we're seeing smoking back and casual smoking and the normalization of smoking back in cinema.
Yeah, I've had some colleagues in the US who do fantastic work in this, where they actually track all the exposures of cigarettes in popular television programs and streaming and in films. And unfortunately, Netflix is one of the sort of worst purveyors of this. Program Stranger Things, for example, is riddled with cigarette imagery. It's set in, you know, in the 80s, and apparently, you know, to make it authentic, quote unquote, even though it's a show with horror and monsters in it, you have to show all kinds of smoking imagery. And I think this just sort of gives license for other programs to bring back that cigarette imagery as well.
Lots of people are questioning whether or not these so-called cigfluencers and these pages, if you scratched away, whether or not the tobacco companies are behind it. Is there any proof to that?
Yeah, look, of course, I want to make it very clear that if you are an independent person who just really likes smoking and vaping and you want to post about that on social media, I'm not here to tell you that, you know, that should be against the law. However, if an influencer is receiving free products or maybe tickets to an event, or if they're even just blatantly being paid to promote these products, then that's a real, that's a commercial enterprise, and that is against our tobacco and vaping laws. And we have good evidence from the UK that Lily Allen, for example, again, who just released a really popular album, you know, isn't a young pop star anymore, but certainly is an influencer. She had an agreement with British American Tobacco to promote their vaping products.
1-300-222-774. If this is something that you've noticed, you can text as well, 0437-774-774. Can you imagine any changes coming in, Becky, when we look at influencers and what they can or can't sell or align themselves with? We know in France, with fast fashion, for example, they're trying to bring in strict laws. Is it even possible to police something like this?
Yeah, absolutely it is. And I think we often are sort of misled by these same media companies that benefit from this promotion, that it's impossible to regulate, that they're too big to change, that, you know, we just don't understand how they work. And that's completely not true. They can be held accountable. And look, we're just in the midst of it right now, of introducing a social media ban for under 16s. I think if we're capable of doing that, we are more than capable of legislating what advertisements can be on social media.
This on Instagram, high-end influencers posting pictures of trays of cigarettes offered at parties. Whether or not popular culture you think is a part of the rise of why we're seeing Gen Z taking up cigarettes, not vaping, is there going to be a flow on then, Becky, to the next generation, to the younger generation?
I'm really concerned that this idea that, you know, illicit tobacco is rife and e-cigarettes, we can't control them. We need to turn that narrative around and go back to what we know works in public health, that we have really strong, solid laws that the community supports and wants. They need to be enforced. We need to bring back those really hard-hitting campaigns that reach everybody. We know what to do in tobacco control in Australia. It is not a great mystery. We need governments to work together to ensure that we don't sacrifice yet another, you know, generation of people to nicotine addiction.
Harry's called us in Kyneton. Hi, Harry.
G'day, Rich. Look, you've disappointed me. I was expecting you to say the board has lit up.
Oh, no. Well, it hasn't.
No, I have a serious point apart from the bad joke. It's the government's making. They went way too hard on taxing cigarettes. And they've immediately created a prohibition situation. And we know how that goes historically.
The fact that, and speaking to people around the office, that illegal cigarettes are the price that we were paying in the 90s. And that was part of the reason why we gave up in the 90s. $15 was worth a lot more and felt like a lot more than what it does today. Price is a big driver in that, Becky. I mean, I think Harry's right in that the black market is there and thriving because people are still addicted to nicotine and this is a cheaper alternative.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt the only reason people buy illicit tobacco products is because they are cheap. It's not like they're better products or they like them more or anything like this. But to me, the solution isn't to cut the tax. The solution is to hold the supply chain, is to control it. Right now, we allow cigarettes to be sold pretty much in every other shop in every community all across Australia, which is just madness for a product that kills 2 out of 3 people who use it, is highly taxed, and is incredibly addictive. Yet we sell it as casually as we sell milk, bread, and cheese. And to me, seizing control of that supply chain would absolutely help us to control the illicit market and would also bring down smoking rates. I don't want people smoking illicit tobacco or legal tobacco. They're both very, very harmful.
People are noticing it. I mean, there's a message here from Lynn. It says, my husband and I were in Smith Street, Fitzroy last Friday night. I was actually shocked to see alfresco tables of 20-year-olds or 20-plus-year-olds all smoking cigarettes. We couldn't believe it. Apart from smoking in an eating establishment, which we thought was prohibited, the street was a swirl with just filthy cigarette smoke. And she also mentions the latest Julia Roberts movie set and the fact that everybody was smoking on that as well. And that's something that I've noticed and smelt. And I was like, wow, I feel like I'm smelling cigarette smoke more. And you start to wonder whether or not the numbers are up. And I guess my final question, Becky, is it's impossible to get those numbers now because the majority of younger people are smoking illegal tobacco, so we just don't have that data.
Well, we do still do national health survey data where we interview people all across Australia every 2 years to ask all about all kinds of health behaviors. So we still do collect that information. You're right in that we don't have necessarily the tax tobacco sales amount to put against it, but we absolutely do still survey people and we do collect that data. So don't be stressed about that.
Right.
We will keep it. Yeah.
Of course.
But then the next point that I will make is I think it's really interesting how cigarette smoke now is a remarkable activity. I think, you know, 30 years ago, people would be smoking everywhere and no one would have even really noticed. And because we've had such success in bringing cigarette you know, use down to less than 10% of the population smokes on a daily basis. When we see it now, it is truly, it's something we notice. It's remarkable to us. The University of Sydney, where I work, we don't allow even smoking on the outdoor campus anywhere. And if someone, you know, has a cheeky cigarette on campus, you really do notice it because it's not something that we're used to or that we smell anymore.
Becky, good to get your insights. Thanks for the work that you do in this space.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Becky Freeman, Professor of Public Health at the University of Sydney. Are you noticing a rise in Gen Z smoking? Not vaping, but smoking cigarettes. Kath says, I was mortified when my mid-20s son took up cigarette smoking, despite me telling both kids growing up how awful, how damaging it is. I grew up in a home of a chain-smoking mum. I hated it. I wish I could have filmed my mum's ghoulish descent to death as such a young woman, 65 years of age, as a result of lung cancer. It would impact a lot of young folk. Maybe it would be a deterrent. However, my son has since stopped. Kath, thank you. Jo's in Brighton. Morning, Jo.
Yeah, hi there. My concern, I'm a healthcare professional. I work in hospitals. I work as a clinical dietitian, and I work mostly in ICU and oncology. So a lot of the patients that I see are going through cancer treatment, and that's pretty horrific. Your texter before used the word ghoulish, and I think that's actually such a good word to describe some of the decline that you see in people's health, but the effect that treatment has as well on people. What we're seeing in regards to cancers that are appearing now is that we've got so much data on tobacco and how that causes certain cancers, and we kind of, it's the devil we know. Whereas now we're getting these cheaper, I'll use the term chop-chop, you know.
Illegal cigarettes,
Yeah, we don't know really what's in them. So there might be a percentage of tobacco, but we also don't know the quality. We don't know what else is in there, how it's been grown, et cetera, et cetera. So we're seeing cancers appearing that are unique, that might be considered novel, that maybe 5 years ago we had no way of dealing with them. We're getting a little bit better at these sort of more unusual cancers now with things like immunotherapy. But we're also seeing just these unusual things turning up. And with the vaping as well, we don't have the research background. We don't have the history.
Yeah, that's the frightening thing, isn't it, that they haven't been around long enough to have that data and to have that history. Jo, thank you for the work that you do. Yeah. It's really intense and important work that you do. So thank you for your insights today. Coming up in just a moment, Mr. Warwick Long has made his way out of Shepparton. Of course, he is the host of the Country Hour. He's in the city, and he's in the city to talk about farmers markets. So do we need more farmers markets on a more regular basis in the heart of the city?
ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So for many of us, we love a farmer's market, but farmer's markets, well, often they're seen as something that tourists do, that you pop into maybe on a Sunday, that are only down at your local rec reserve or footy oval the third Saturday of every month. They're not necessarily seen as a way to do your groceries and to buy your produce. But what if that changed? What if there was a way in the heart of the city to pop into a farmer's market on your way home as opposed to a supermarket? Is that even possible? Would you do it? Would you use it? 1-300-222-774. Warwick Long, host of the Country Hour, today is National Agriculture Day, and as a result, you're celebrating it in the city. What's going on, man?
Where else would you rather be than Collins Street, looking at trams go past, just enjoying Agriculture Day, surrounded by skyscrapers here in the city, Rochelle. But it is, it's as you put it, it's a really interesting idea. This is the Victorian Farmers Federation. So this is the group that represents farmers, usually seen quite angry and political, has been around for some of the major protests we've had in the city around things like the emergency services levy or tax, depending on how you look at it, and being angry at, say, underserved parts of regional Victoria. This is a very different feeling. This is an impromptu farmers market in an empty former bank building at the bottom of a skyscraper in Collins Street as a way of welcoming in people from the city and politicians just a stone's throw away in Spring Street as well to come and talk to people who produce food, buy some food, hopefully, buy any myriad of type of food. You can buy a drought bag here, which goes to drought relief as well, and try and have a conversation about what it takes to grow food and how it's produced. And I was sceptical, Rochelle Hunt, before I got here, to think, is anyone really, like, I've walked down Collins Street many times before. It doesn't look like anybody's really looking friendly and ready to walk into a shop. Well, I was wrong. There's so many people in here having a great time talking. And I was speaking to an old fella just before who says, I live here, just up about a block from where we're standing. And he's like, there's nothing like this for us here. And he was buying up an absolute power of food. And he was just so happy that something was here. And this is a shop that's only here for 2 days for National Agriculture Day, but it's already starting some conversations.
And I know in the past was over the years when you and I have spoken about supermarket alternatives, if people are feeling disengaged, if they're feeling annoyed with supermarkets and their tactics, what are the alternatives? Inevitably, people will say farmers markets. However, they're not as accessible as I think they could be. Kerry's in Romsey, and Kerry, you see overseas that farmers markets are maybe used a little differently to here?
Yeah, I think, thank you for taking my call. I travelled in France earlier this year. I had an opportunity and really travelled around regional areas and did pull into a little village to grab something to eat. And here was a small farmer's market. Some were small, some were larger. And it was on any day of the week. It wasn't just weekends like we have here. I mean, we have some fabulous farmer's markets up this way, but like you said, the weekends. They're either Saturdays or Sundays or once a month or,
What a great way to be able to get, because for many of us, we're not that organised. I know as I was leaving this morning, I'm thinking, oh gosh, what on earth am I going to cook for dinner? Do I have to stop at the supermarket again? Like, I know everyone there on first name basis. It's ridiculous because you're constantly trying to figure out what to cook. If there was an alternative was, like Kerry's saying, in France, where there's just little mini farmers markets where you can just maybe pick up a nice pie or just some beautiful veg or some salad mix or whatever it is on the way home, fruit for the kids' lunchboxes, that you've got that alternative that's just there all the time. How possible is that?
That's the hard bit. That's the bit that a lot of people have tried to work out throughout sort of Australia, because the way our cities and indeed how our lives are designed, so much of our relationship with food for a lot of people is quite spontaneous, whereas farmers markets are something that you need to set your clock by, right? You need either good weather or a regular event near you that you don't have other social events on, or don't have other commitments, that you can get and shop at that specific time and get what you need. The tough nut to crack, if you want to take on things like supermarkets, is having the ability to have somewhere where people can go buy produce and have that connection with food on a regular basis with a bit of spontaneity. Say, oh, like you going, what am I going to have
just
for the kids
an alternative
tonight? Oh, pop down here. And I can tell you, if you pop down here, there's pasta over one shoulder, there's a mushroom person over to the other shoulder, there's vegetables everywhere, there's a lamb bloke here, there's cheese and milk just there, there's sort of food options everywhere. So once you get walking, you can sort of make up your idea. But to get that here, we've got probably 10, 12 different producers here, Rochelle, and that's a lot of commitment from those people to be here to connect with the people who want to buy their produce.
Yeah. How is it different then was, so there's quite a few texts that say Vic Market, Rish, the biggest farmer's market in the heart of the CBD. But how is a farmer's market and something smaller, say where you are at Collins Street at the moment, or maybe down at Docklands, is there a way, like it doesn't have to be a huge scale market like, you know, the Footscray Market or the Vic Market. We can have them live side by side. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
Yeah, and it's just working out how to make them work. And look, the Queen Vic Market and the other markets around Melbourne have had their own problems with development and building around them and access as well. It's not a perfect world for that system either, and it's finding a way where these things can work together, like symbiotically, and be able to help produce, better produce, get on our tables. by a complete tangent today, following up a completely different story, Rochelle, I was speaking to somebody who is an agriculture teacher in high schools, and she was telling me a year seven class she had at the start of the year. She goes, often start by introducing people to agriculture by talking about what they had for dinner last night. 19 kids in her class, not one of them had vegetables.
No.
For Sunday night dinner, like had a serving of vegetables on their Sunday night dinner the night before. And she goes, that is an extreme example. I've asked them since then, and we had five and six a different night out of the 19, but it's never more than half.
Wow.
And so there's a break in sort of how a lot of people are having a relationship with food in family environments, and how we connect ourselves to come and get fresh produce, speak to the person who produced it, hear from them how to cook it. Because I don't know about you, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to grab the beets, bok choys and kale that's on the table just over to my right here. But I know the person standing next to it will tell me what to do with
it. Bok choy and kale, yes. Beetroot stains the stains. I can never get it out of my hands.
See, that's the first thing I'd be cooking. I love a beetroot. But that's the fun thing about coming and connecting with people like this. But it's how to do it where they're getting value out of it, so it's worth the farmer's time to be there, and it's how to do it so people are connected, and it's how to have a conversation about some of the difficulties it takes to grow that food at the moment. And that's the other part. This is Agriculture Day. They invited all the pollies down to come through. A lot of the pollies have been through over the last 24 hours or so, this shop, and spoken to some of these producers, and I was speaking to a lamb producer before, and he's like, that's why I came. I've got a real problem with access to abattoirs at the moment because I'm a small producer, and if the one that's taking my lambs at the moment says no, I don't have a business anymore, and I'm really scared about that, and I wanted to talk to the agriculture minister about that, and he got that chance just simply by selling food here. So there's a lot to something like this, but it's an interesting idea, and it's a softer idea. It's not a protest. It's not a march. It's not telling city people they don't care, when often they do, but they've got busy lives as well. It's just an open invitation to people on Collins Street, to the pollies up the road, and it seems to have a different feel today.
Yeah, well, we know that the way to someone's heart is through food. Will's in, well, ours at least was. Will's in Ballarat. Hi, Will.
Hi there. I think that's a great initiative, and we have markets every weekend here, which is great. But I do think one of the major issues for people is just not so much frequency, but affordability of produce. The produce is outstanding, but it can actually be significantly more expensive to buy, for example, an avocado from your local farmer's market than it is from a major chain.
And that's a big part of why farmers are there today for this. I guess that almost is a soft protest, is looking at the role that they play, how supermarkets quite often treat farmers. But I guess, Will, I would also bring into that quite often at supermarkets we're forced to buy two-for-one or packaged food, and we buy more than what we actually need. That if we just purchased that avocado or that kale that maybe is a bit more expensive, but we didn't buy as much of it, and we didn't throw anything out, then maybe I wonder if the end of the week the cost would be the same.
Oh, and the same could be said for a trip to a well-known big hardware store or the middle aisle of another type of supermarket as well too, Rochelle. There are so many ways that trick us into spending more than we need, and sometimes if you have that direct relationship, you might have a healthier lifestyle and a better outcome and feel better about the food that you're eating, even if you're spending a little bit more than what you'd be paying on that individual item in that trip.
And the experience is a lot nicer as well. Will, we take your point though. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
I find supermarkets sometimes really stressful, and I'm stuck in there for ages, and I know that deliberately things are put in certain places so that you venture through all of the aisles, but there's nothing worse than being in one aisle, realising you forgot the one thing that you came for, and it's four aisles away, and you get stuck in this vortex. You're like, how long have I been in this supermarket?
Look, most of us shop there, right? Like the absolute majority of our food comes from there, and you're not a terrible person if you're shopping there. This is just looking at a different way, and farmers markets are looking at a different way, and it's how do we design a system where both can coexist, because at the moment that's not there.
And can people just pop in, Warwick Long? Yeah. I know you're going to be hosting the Country Hour. Whereabouts? So you're down the fancy end of Collins Street.
Yeah. So just like, you know, the Parliament's almost the buildings at the end of the road here. We're at Farrow House, is the Victorian Farmers Federation building on Collins Street. It's sort of up the top on the hill. It's a sort of little building. You won't actually, it can be a bit hard to notice. You just got to look for an Ag Day sign basically out the front, and then you just wander in here. It's a bank. It's an empty bank. Everything's been stripped out, And there's just
full
food
of produce.
Everywhere.
Love it.
Food, and there's wine, and there's gin, and there's honey, and then just a whole lot more food. Olive oil, mushrooms, everything.
Oh, man. Yeah. I'm sold. Hey, did you get your hair cut, Woz?
You give a give away all my secrets, Rochelle Hunt.
Did you make it to the barber nice and early?
I made it to the barber this morning. I got a coffee. I found my way here. It's been a real Woz trip to the city this
Mate, you are so Melbourne. You hipster. Having a coffee, going to the barber. Oh. Enjoy your show, mate. Thank you.
Thanks, mate.
Warwick Long hosted the Country Hour today. He is live from Collins Street from a pop-up farmer's market. So down the so-called Paris end, if you're in the city, if you're wandering around, you want to have a look, you want to speak to some farmers, or you just want to buy yourself some produce, that's where you need to head. And of course, you can listen to Warwick Long on the Country Hour in our regions, or even in Melbourne. If you want to listen, you can just go to the ABC Listener and look for Country Hour Victoria. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to talk about why we want to celebrate women's sport, women watching sport and playing sport. Yet for whatever reason, we think that women consume and play sport differently. Why?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Still plenty of texts coming in on Generation Z smoking and whether or not you've noticed that as well. This, we certainly won't be going to any establishment where they allow smoking. I agree. I think I've seen and heard people smoking just casually in al fresco areas. I can't believe it. We also thought that that was illegal. And on farmers markets in the city, people saying it's a great idea, would love to have farmers markets in the city. Some areas in Macedon, for example, the local areas there have got farmers markets every weekend for locals. So it's not really a tourist destination. It's not somewhere where you go and buy smelly candles. It's where you go and do your shopping. And this, we've shopped every weekend in various farmers markets for 20 or more years. I just check my Instagram and where I can go for those farmers markets. It's what I cook. I cook it every night, plant-based home eating. Oh, that's great. That's a really good idea. And plus, you get to see and meet different locals from different suburbs all the time. Now, earlier this week, you may have seen that Sky Sports launched and then scrapped as quick as it came in. It disappeared. A new so-called female-focused TikTok channel. It was called Halo, but it faced backlash instantly with some posts describing it as patronising and sexist. So if you didn't see it, it had things like neon pink captions, it had text boxes where they talked about everything from so-called hot girl walks to matcha, coffee. The broadcaster admitted that it didn't get it right and that it stopped all activity instantly. So lots of people have been talking about it. Our very own Catherine Murphy on ABC News Breakfast spoke to the legend that is Lane Beachley. This is how Lane reacted to the idea of Halo.
Why is it the people making decisions still aren't understanding that maybe women like sport for the same reason men like sport?
A part of it is a generational hangover. I mean, we've still got people who are in positions of influence and power that aren't listening to their to the people they're targeting. They're listening to what they think they want, or they're listening to what the minor want, actually. And the thing is that if you want to see things from a women's point of view, then talk to women. We don't think pink, and it sets us back unnecessarily, because like you said, we have come so far, but we still have so far to go, and it's about breaking down those barriers. So good on them for giving it a crack, because they're obviously recognizing that 50% of their audience is female.
Yeah,
but talk to females the way in which they want to be talked to. Don't talk down to us. Don't treat us as something that's different. Treat us as someone who's equal, because like you said, we love sport for the sake of sport. We don't do it because we're females. We do it because we love to play, and we need to be encouraged to play more often.
Gosh, she's a legend. That's Lane Beachley there speaking with Catherine Murphy on ABC News Breakfast. So was it right idea, wrong approach? Liz Quinn, co-owner of the W Club in Abbotsford, former Richmond Football Club's AFLW Culture and Leadership Program leader. Liz, a warm welcome into the studio. Is Lane right? Was it right idea, wrong approach? Or is it just sport is sport, sports fans are sports fans, athletes are athletes? Where are we at the moment? Because it's such a tricky space.
It is. I agree with Lane. Actually, I think she's hitting the nail on the head there in the sense that, you know, women don't want to be spoken down to. We don't want to be infantilized. We love sport just as much as anyone else. We love the nuance of it, the analysis, the insight, the depth. I don't think I've ever watched a sporting broadcast and thought, what would help me understand this a lot more is some sparkles.
But having questions is, yeah, having questions is okay. I have heaps of questions when I'm watching sport, but I just don't need, yeah, some sparkles and it to be in neon pink in any way. So you're the co-owner of the W Club, co-founder. For those who don't know, this is a sports bar, essentially, but you just happen to show women's sport.
Yes.
So the idea of segregating and making it stand out on its own, but at the same time trying to be inclusive. It's a fine line that you've managed to walk at the W Club, because we want to be the same, but at the same time we need a different space.
Exactly. And what we say is we are almost exclusively showing women's sport. So we recognise that a lot of women want to watch men's sport in a place that's safe, inclusive, designed for their needs, and where they can do so around other women who love sport. So we will show some men's sport, but we will never show men's sport at the expense of women's sport. But you're right, it is a tough one to balance of how do you, you know, on one hand, we've opened the W Club in response to so many places refusing to show women's sport.
Yeah.
So we didn't want to do the same thing, just on the flip, and refuse to show men's sport. But that commitment that we've made is to never show men's sport at the expense of women's sport.
And this is a global movement as well. And one thing that I always pick up on, and in just a moment we're going to look at how that's being broadened out into actually how we even design stadiums, not just where we watch sport, is safety and the idea that you could, God forbid, go on your own, right? And sit at the bar and watch sport and feel safe, feel included, have a toilet that's in a safe space that's well lit.
And clean.
Has toilet paper, you know, just saying. Has sanitary bins, whatever. Has decent food. Has something other than beer. Forever, sports bars have been associated with being blokey. Not saying that that's a bad thing, but there's room for other ways to enjoy sport.
Absolutely. And we've tried to sort of redesign what a sports bar is. Does it have to be dark? Does it have to have, you know, a wall full of TV screens, blaring sport all day, every day? Or can we find other ways to celebrate women's sport without, you know, showing replays in the quiet hours?
So, okay, Halo, the idea was right, the approach was wrong. As someone who owns a sports bar that's predominantly for women, or safe and inclusive for women and showing women's sport, how hard is it to actually access the sport, to find it, to have it broadcast? We know that women's basketball is better. They've got now more cameras. The broadcast availability is getting, I guess, more frequent and more commercial. But how hard is it for you to actually find the sport to stick on the telly?
It's really tough. In fact, it's almost a full-time job, is trying to track down what sport is going to be on where. Broadcasts are so disaggregated. There's a lot, obviously, on some of the big and well-known broadcasters and streaming services, but, you know, we're up to about 7 or 8 different streaming services that we show, as well as YouTube and bespoke sort of streaming on internet websites.
Is that an area that's growing, the bespoke streaming?
Yes, it is, because it's really tough for the smaller sports that don't have the funding to get the airspace.
Even the biggest sports struggle to get the airspace.
That's exactly right. So, I mean, what chance do some of these lesser-known sports have?
I find that fascinating, that there is potentially a disruptor that's out there. You're listening to Liz Quinn, who's the co-owner of the W Club in Abbotsford, the former Richmond Football Club's AFLW Culture and Leadership, from the leadership program there. Liz, okay, so let's take all of the concepts of what your bar is doing, all the things that didn't work with Halo. You then put that into an arena form. So again, around the world, architects are thinking differently about how we build sporting arenas. I remember maybe a year ago or so, there was a new mum who was a researcher, also a footy fan, and realised that as a breastfeeding mum, and in those early days, and I was the same, I'm still paying my Saints membership, but could I get to the footy? Technically, yes. Was there anywhere for me to put my pram? Was there anywhere for me to feed comfortably? Could the child even fit on my lap at the seats? No, no, and no. Mm. It was, I couldn't even get down to my seat. We don't design for women. Now, I'm not saying all women need to take their children or their babies to the footy, but if you want to.
They might like the choice.
I might like the choice, right? I'm still paying my membership, but I can't get in there. This is an emerging space. So the Women's Super League footy, I think, in the UK is looking at how we design arenas. Does that need to change?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And even looking at their guidelines that the WSL put out, you know, things around restroom availability being a split of 45% for men, 45% for women, and 10% non-gender specific bathrooms and breastfeeding rooms. So even just sort of changing the design, wider seats in some areas.
I think if you choose to breastfeed or pump, you're doing that in a toilet if you can even get into it at like the G.
Exactly. Exactly. So dedicated rooms for breastfeeding, for fans, as well as for the athletes themselves, near the changing facilities. So really looking after both sides, really making sure that the athletes have the facilities they need to prepare, perform, recover, and for the fans to enjoy that viewing experience a lot more.
Whenever you go to, and I'm just using AFL as an example here, forever, for decades, there's been a queue past multiple chip stands for the women's toilets, and the men's, not a queue at all.
Not a queue. Yeah.
Not a queue at all. Maybe one non-gender toilet cannot find somewhere to breastfeed. When we look at, so that's from a fan's perspective, what could be different for the athletes? Again, I remember speaking to, and I can't even remember the code, it was a more of a fringe sport, they didn't even have sanitary bins in the bathrooms.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's having those facilities available, sanitary bins for the athletes, space to breastfeed if they need to, or express, or even childminding facilities for athletes. How they design gyms is a little different as well, in what kind of equipment that are specific to women and the sport that they play. Safety and lighting, even where do the athletes park?
Wow, that's a huge one.
And, you know, female athletes returning to their vehicles after a game, where are they doing that? Are they walking out into the public areas to do that, or can they do that somewhere a little more safer? Lighting, you know, changing areas for staff as well, staff of the teams in those areas.
Does anyone
areas
here
as well?
Do it well?
Not particularly.
I thought that might be the answer.
I've had the good fortune to be in a lot of stadia around Australia, and no one's really nailing it. Some places do a lot better. Typically the new builds, you know, in order to secure funding, sometimes they have to demonstrate that they've taken into account. Yeah.
Just finally, Liz, for the W Club and what's being shown this weekend, I was really excited to speak to the CEO of women's basketball. Mm. I've forgotten her name off the top of my head. But just the amount of work and cameras that's going into broadcasting basketball. Mm. Is that leading at the moment in terms of the amount of energy and resources to ensure that those men, women, whoever that want to watch women's basketball can, and it's not done in this shonky, you ask your best mate to hold up an iPhone to film it?
Yes, absolutely. I think they've gone from, I think they were saying 2 cameras to 9 cameras on average. And as a result, the TV product is better, which makes people want to go to the games. And that's a deliberate investment that they've made in order to make sure the viewing experience at home is great, but then attract people to want to come to the games because it looks like such a great place to be and a good product.
You would have noticed the difference at your club.
Well and truly. Yeah. Well and truly. Yep.
What are you showing this weekend?
We've got some basketball this weekend. We've got 2 AFLW preliminary finals on Saturday, which we're really excited about. There's some ice hockey. There's a whole
ice
bunch
hockey.
Of, yeah, absolutely.
That's random. Love,
well, I mean, the beauty not? Of having this space is we yeah. A, we can show what we want, and B, we can highlight the sports that don't get highlighted anywhere else.
I love that. Always good to speak with you, Liz. Thank
Likewise.
You.
Likewise. Thanks for having me.
Liz Quinn, co-owner of the W Club in Abbotsford, the former leader of the Culture and Leadership Group at Richmond's AFLW. 10 minutes away from midday. Did you go and see Wicked last night, the sequel of Wicked? Are you planning on seeing it this weekend? The reviews have been a bit hum-hum. I'm sort of doing you in 6-7 with my hands right here. So if you've gone and seen Wicked, what did you make of it?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Well, the wait was a long time. It was months for the sequel. So the second instalment, the final instalment for Wicked, dropped last night. The premiere was last night. You could have gone and seen it. It's called Wicked for Good.
Haven't you heard? I'm the Wicked Witch of the West.
Well, I saw the first. I have to admit, I cried in the first and I was ready for the second, but I'm a little bit worried because the reviews haven't been the best, but maybe you saw it. Have you got a review for us? What did you think? Associate Professor Liam Burke is an Associate Professor in Cinema and Screen Studies and Discipline Leader at Swinburne University. Liam, the anticipation has been, it's been long, right? As long as the film itself. So far, from what I've read, I don't know whether the reviews have been great, but you saw it last night. What did you make of it?
It is good, but it is suffering from comparisons with the first film. Anyone who is familiar with the stage musical will know that the first act of the stage musical is where all the bangers are. So, you know, Defying Gravity, popular, the really famous songs are all in Act One. And Act One also has a much clearer story. It's the Wicked Witch at school, making friends with the Good Witch. The second act of the musical doesn't have the same number of hits and tends to go off in a bunch of tangents. And what they've done with the film versions is, of course, they've split the musical into two acts, into two movies. And so that kind of, they've kind of given themselves a grand challenge with the second one by not having the same number of famous songs. It roughly parallels the events of The Wizard of Oz. So Dorothy's there, but she's not there. So that's a bit confusing. So they haven't done enough in the adaptation, I think, to redress the problems of the stage version's second act. Having said that, the two lead actors, Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande, are as brilliant as they are in the
first
one.
They're incredible together, aren't they? They really are quite amazing to watch on screen.
And I think that's the problem with this film as well, is they're not together as much.
Right.
Because if you've seen the first film, you know that the friendship kind of fractures. They go off on their different paths. So they don't get as many scenes together as they did in the first film. And whenever they're together on screen, that's when the film kind of really soars. But that really only happens in the third act. And so I think for, you know, for some people, it might be a bit of a slog getting to that third act.
Liam, with the first, you know, people dressed up, the fanfare, there was singing, people were told not to sing as much and not to enjoy it as much. Like, it, the hype and the fun around it was incredible. Was that the same this time?
It is a darker story. So the first film, their relationship fractures and the Wicked Witch, she's not really a Wicked Witch, she's actually, but she's scapegoated by The Wizard of Oz. And so it has more complex themes. It has a body count, which you wouldn't have gotten in the first film. But things happen that are much more dramatic. And so I think that somewhat dampens the festive spirit. Having said that, if you go on social media, you know, the really hardcore fans, and there are many of them for Wicked, are getting the emotional catharsis that they wanted from the film. But it's probably not as jubilant. I mean, I suppose a comparison would be later Harry Potter films,
which take
a slightly darker turn. And so it's not, you know, it won't necessarily be the festive staple that, you know, the first film will probably become, in the same way that the early Harry Potters you tend to put on at Christmas time, and the darker ones you maybe watch less frequently.
It's interesting that you mention Harry Potter there and the build-up, the anticipation, the storylines around when the next one will be, the dressing up, how far out we know about them, that whole dramatic build-up to the cinema experience. Wicked was one of those. Even the way the first one ended, and knowing straight away that you had to wait until November to see it, that build-up experience, is that kind of tied into cinematic plans now, marketing, that has to be a part of it?
Absolutely. That's, I mean, a really good point. I mean, cinemas have been challenged by streaming. There are so many options at home, and in the pandemic didn't do them any favours. And I think the habit of going to movies has kind of collapsed a great deal. So people really want to justify the trip to the movies. So they want something that's spectacular. So you could think of like a superhero movie or an action blockbuster. They want something that is like a fan favorite, so you have to see it first time, like a Minecraft movie. Or they want something that's a little bit participatory. So you could think of something like the Taylor Swift concert films, the K-pop Demon Hunters sing-along. And Wicked is all of those things. It's spectacular. It has a very enthusiastic fan base. And whether you're allowed or not, people do like to sing along. So this necessitates going to the biggest multiplex, the best sound, the biggest screen to enjoy that communal experience. And people aren't really doing that for dramas or comedies anymore. So it tends to be these kind of big tentpole releases that gets bums back in seats.
Did you dress up, Liam? Come on, you can tell us.
I did not dress up, but I was surrounded by many, green-coloured and sparkly folk who were.
Yeah, and if they're wearing horns in front of you, it's hard to look past. And I guess just finally, the merch and the merchandise that has come with this film. I mean, I was in a homewares department and seeing teacups and all sorts of things that were Wicked-related. The merch has spread into every part of our lives.
And merch is a huge part here because in many respects, the movies are like milk and eggs at the supermarket. They're a loss leader. They get you in, but where they really make the money is in the, you know, the apparel, the Happy Meals, the books.
The Duna covers, the whatever, right? It's everything.
You spend hundreds of dollars. You know, you go see the film once, maybe twice in the cinema, but you spend hundreds of dollars on Lego and all sorts of associated merchandise. So a film may not be a box office triumph, but for the conglomerates that make these movies, it can be quite a lucrative franchise.
Out of five, what would you give it, Liam?
I'd probably give it 3.
Ooh, okay, still worth saying. It's still good fun. Associate Professor Liam Burke, thank you. Associate Professor in Cinema and Screen Studies, a Discipline Leader at Swinburne University. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Take care and we'll speak to you soon.